Hello and welcome to another edition of Critical Q&A, the show where I answer your questions based on what you've left for me in the comments section of my Q&A videos or have sent to me by email at askchrisshelton@gmail.com. If you haven't yet checked out the Sensibly Speaking podcast, I would, you probably should because it's pretty good. And this week especially, it was, I think we did a really good show. And also there's, for Scientology watchers out there, there's some news from Tony Ortega's blog this last week here, a couple days ago, that was absolutely fascinating conspiracy theory nonsense that we got into on the podcast. So we had some fun with that. So anyway, invite you to check it out. And now let's go ahead and get on with your questions. Steve Prelwitz. I would love to hear your thoughts about Captain Bill Robertson, his breakaway Ron Zorg, and the Markabian conspiracy storyline. As you know, Bill took his narrative directly from LRH's claims about aliens from Markab, Xenu's civilization, controlling the Earth, and spun it into a plot about these beings having worked with the CIA to infiltrate Scientology, resulting in the early 1980s Stalinist purge, which pushed out Bill, David Mayo, and others. Nancy Maney describes how she fell under the spell of Bill's storyline during her own meltdown, and John Atack tells fascinating tales about this as well, including descriptions of Bill's method for contacting L. Ron Elray, and so on. I dare you to comment on the corn cob. Anyway, ridiculous as this may sound, the story Bill created lives on in modern Illuminati conspiracy literature. Just substitute the Jews for the Markabians, and Ron's org continues to exist, especially in Russia. What do you have to say about all this? Well, Steve, you definitely are well informed on this. You don't need me telling you a whole lot about what Captain Bill Robertson was up to. And for those of you who think I just spoke a bunch of Martian, there's a lot in here in this question. Bill Robertson was a guy who was an early Scientologist. He was one of the first Sea Organization members, I think one of the original members from 1967. And he got into a position where he was the second deputy commodore. In other words, there was L. Ron Hubbard, who held the position or rank of commodore. That was what he gave himself as the head of the Sea Organization. And Mary Sue Hubbard, his wife, was the deputy commodore. So Bill Robertson rose up to a position of second deputy commodore, and he held a high position in the church through the 70s in the Commodore's Messenger org all the way up until 1981 when he got kicked out. And the Stalinist purge that Steve refers to in this question is David Miscavige's purges of the Sea Organization and the Commodore's Messenger org and the Guardian's office and the whole structure of Scientology and how he was just getting rid of people who were against him, Miscavige, right? And how there was, you know, it wasn't just one man, Miscavige, who was cleaning house, though. At that time, L. Ron Hubbard had a whole paranoia going on about the fact that he thought that the church had been infiltrated by the FBI or the CIA or other external influences. And so they were getting rid of people. It wasn't just Miscavige getting rid of people on his quest for power. It was also Hubbard himself who was ordering this and thought that this was going on. So Bill Robertson was the victim of one of these purges, even though he was loyal to the end. He died in 1991, I believe it is. But when he got kicked out of the church, he set up what is now known as the Free Zone. And the Free Zone is basically a branch of independent Scientologists. And the splintering of Scientology in the early 1980s was quite intense. It's actually really something that Scientology survived that period because thousands of people left Scientology. John Atack, who's the author of A Piece of Blue Sky, has written about this. John's a Scientology historian of sorts, good friend of mine, and he knows more about this kind of history than most people. And he said it was 10,000 people who actually left Scientology at that point. It was a lot, and there was a big splintering. So Bill Robertson took a position as a leader in this fractured community of Scientologists, and who were breaking away from the official Church of Scientology, and he started this free zone, and he started what's called Ron's Org, which is an independent Scientology group, and which flourished for quite a while, and now apparently, according to their website that they have up and current, it looks like Ron's Org is a group that mainly operates in Russia. They have lots of little branches of delivery centers of Scientology, most of them in Russia, or other European places. I think there's only one or two in the United States. So that's kind of the current status of this group. Bill Robertson led it, and he and a couple others actually continued to do research with Scientology through the 1980s and finished the bridge. They finished Ron's work, basing their researches on Hubbard's original materials. And it got very complicated, and there's all kinds of stuff to know about it. But bottom line is, it's all just a bunch of faldy-roll. I mean, as far as you know, I think I've said how I feel about independent Scientology. I've addressed this very recently, so I'm not going to rehash all that. As far as Captain Bill goes now, getting specific on this guy, this, you know, Hubbard was one of the ultimate conspiracy theorists, and in fact, I talk about this in my podcast this last week, right? And Bill just kind of took that and ran with it. I mean, he takes this conspiracy stuff. Oh my God. There's a small, hopefully small group of people who actually believe that the Church of Scientology was infiltrated by the FBI or the CIA or other forces, government forces, in order to take it over. And that, in fact, David Miscavige is a government operative, or was put in there and was installed in there in order to take over the church, and that Hubbard was gotten rid of. I mean, there's every imaginary, you know, every kind of conspiracy you can imagine goes on with this stuff, and it's all total, complete nonsense. I mean, none of this stuff is true. The real story is bad enough. I mean, with Miscavige and Hubbard going insane and Miscavige taking over, and I've detailed all of that, right? This is known. But all this conspiracy stuff, it just, oh my God. I ran into this stuff for the first time when I was first going down the rabbit hole, coming out of Scientology and going on the internet. And Bill Robertson sort of came across my path, you know, through various things I was looking on the internet. And I looked at what he was saying. And of course, he'd been long dead, but I looked at what he had been doing in the 80s. And I thought, you got to be kidding me with this. I mean, it never had any appeal to me at all. So the idea that the Markabians, I mean, Bill Robertson has said in lectures that he gave and videos that he did that the Markabian forces have landed here on Earth and through their front group of transcendental meditation, we're taking over and we're buying up gold or something, and we're going to be crashing the world market through gold purchases. I mean, you know, this stuff is just ridiculous. It's Alex Jones level insanity. And that's really kind of what I have to say about it. I mean, you kind of just put it over there and you go, okay, that's whack. And now I'm going to get on with reality now. And that's kind of what's going on with those guys. And unfortunately, there's a lot of Russians who now, I guess, are caught up in this. And I'll be doing a video probably this week on the Russian situation with Scientology. And apparently this Ron's Org stuff that's delivering the real Hubbard tech has a lot of Russians very interested in it. So if Scientology, if official Scientology has a real meltdown in Russia, and it looks like it might, with the raids and everything and the government clamping down on it, this Ron's Org group, these groups are probably going to flourish as Scientologists go from the official Scientology to these groups. So, you know, I think Ron's Org is going to be here for a while. And I don't know, I guess that's what I have to say about it. Leo M. Rogers. This comment concerns Laura Prepon and the most recent series of Orange is the New Black. Don't read this if you don't want spoilers. As you have commented on previously, the actress, Laura Prepon, has defended the Church of Scientology against allegations of homophobia, which we know to be true, and is currently portraying a homosexual character in Orange is the New Black. In the most recent series, aired a few days ago, some other characters in this show made openly critical remarks about the Church of Scientology. As of the end of the series, Prepon's character isn't set to go anywhere, so can you shed any light on what the Church of Scientology might think of this? Did they know beforehand and allowed her to continue filming with these SPPTSs, or might she be in trouble for appearing in this program? I can't claim any, you know, inside knowledge about this, so I'm not going to say for sure one way or the other whether the church knew this was coming or not, or whether Laura had any idea that it was coming. But what I can say is there is no way, there is no scenario where the Church of Scientology is okay with being badmouthed on a TV show. Just forget it. There's no way Laura was given a pass on that, or that the show was like, oh, okay, we understand. It's just fiction and it's just a TV show. Ha ha, no big. That didn't happen. That I guarantee you, heads were rolling within the Church of Scientology over how they either did not know about this or could not put a stop to it before it happened. And Laura is very likely getting some very severe ethics handlings over this. Now, this, again, this is total supposition on my part. I have no inside information about this. But I'm judging and saying these things based on earlier experiences, a la Isaac Hayes and South Park, where he was made to quit South Park. I heard that he didn't even want to, but the church clamped down very hard because of, you know, that whole Xenu episode. I mean, you don't get more critical of Scientology than literally, you know, animating the entire story of OT3, right? So Isaac Hayes was you know, put on a short leash on that one and yanked right out of there. And I imagine that Laura is getting a similar treatment right now. Does that mean she's going to leave the show? I don't know. You know, it's a very successful show. South Park was a very successful show. It's a little hard to say, you know, what's going to happen. Or whether, you know, Laura might just say, hey, you know, screw you guys. I'm going to continue on with the show. Wouldn't that be nice? So I guess we're just going to have to see what happens. My prediction is that there's going to be some kind of consequences for this. What those consequences could be, I'd really be surprised if the church didn't come down on her in such a way as to get her off that show. I'm pretty sure that's the sort of pressure they're putting on her right now. Is she going to do it? Is that what they're doing? You know, you'd like to think, well, maybe they learned their lesson from South Park or something with Isaac Hayes or the other, you know, things that they do that end up putting them in a bad light in the media, but they don't. The Church of Scientology never learns from its own bad press or bad experiences. It just keeps on keeping on with how it's go, with how it, you know, what it thinks is the best thing to do. So, I don't know. That's my thoughts on it. I guess we'll see what happens. No name. Chris, do you think hardcore atheism can be a cult? Many new atheists hold unscientific views, such as blaming religion for all the world's problems, as Scientologists do with psychiatrists. There have been cases, such as the 2013 murder of British soldier Lee Rigby, in which the perpetrators recorded themselves on camera, specifically blaming UK foreign policy for what they were about to do, yet new atheists still blame religion. Some new atheists, such as Kate Smurthwaite, dismiss all religious people as idiots, the same way Scientologists are dismissive of WOGs. They want to clear the planet by spreading atheism to religious people, believing this will make the world a better place. Many exist within their own echo chambers, only watching YouTube videos and reading books which reinforce their beliefs and contribute to their confirmation biases. The result is groups of extreme atheists who are highly hostile to outside groups, arrogant and lacking empathy, believing that they alone have a monopoly on logic and reason, unable to understand that their religious counterparts may also be rational people who have merely come to a different conclusion. Okay, so to address the first part of your question, which is new atheism or could hardcore atheists be a cult? No, I don't think so. And the reason I say that is because a destructive cult, or rather a destructive cult, which is I think what you're really asking me, right? A destructive cult has very specific characteristics, and one of those characteristics is a leader or leaders who themselves are accumulating and gathering power to themselves and indoctrinating and using their followers for their own ends. And that doesn't really exist amongst hardcore atheists, or any atheists for that matter. I have some familiarity with atheist groups, not just because I've called myself an atheist, but because I've been hanging around a lot of atheists for the last couple years. And the one thing that that almost all of them say is, we don't have any leaders. There are no atheist leaders. This ain't a group like that. And in fact, many of them will rail against the idea of even having a community or a group of any kind. It's actually quite interesting. Many of them are kind of anarchistic in that regard, right? With their atheist groups, right? I'm not saying they're all a bunch of anarchists. I'm saying that in regards to being atheists, they don't want to be in groups. They don't want to be gathered up together, right? And you get lots of diversity within this group. But as far as the hardcore extremists go, I haven't seen hardcore extremist cult leaders in the atheist community or in the atheist world or whatever you want to call it. This group of people that identify as atheists, right? If you gather all those people and put them in a room, I haven't seen anybody who is a recognized leader of that group. There are people who are recognized celebrities of that group, or people who have espoused certain ideas that many atheists agree with, but just as many atheists don't necessarily agree with them. And I'm talking here about Christopher Hitchens or Richard Dawkins, Sam Harris, right? The horsemen of the atheist movement. So you do have a movement. You do have within that movement, as with any movement, you have extremists. You have hardcore atheists who do what you've described in your question. And they do live in echo chambers, and they do think that their way is the only way, and they are very black and white thinkers. So you have cult activity, you have a cult mentality, or you have the kind of mentality that you see in cult members amongst these extremists. But that doesn't mean that they're a destructive cult themselves, if that makes sense, right? They're also not, there's other characteristics of a destructive cult too, where most destructive cults are amassing power or money of some kind to themselves. Atheists aren't doing that, They just happen to have these hardcore guys get on a soapbox about their atheism, and they basically are just a bunch of jerks, right? And I'm not talking about all atheists. Listen to the words I'm saying. The extremists, right? The guys who, even amongst my atheist friends, those guys are like, yeah, not so interested. I don't hang around with or even know, at this point, any hardcore extreme atheists like that. I've seen them on YouTube. I've read about them. I have interacted with a couple, but I don't hang out with those people because they're not fun people to be around. So I think that's sort of my take on that is no, not a destructive cult, but yes, cult-like mentalities. And unfortunately, my take on it is that any group, whether it be a political group, a sports group, a social group, any group, can and does tend to develop a lunatic fringe or a extremist, fringe. And I don't know. I don't know what that's all about. I just see it in enough different groups and stuff that I sort of observe that and think that that's a thing. And maybe a sociologist would have more, bigger words to describe that or talk about that or know more about the percentages of it. I just think that, it's pretty empirically, observable. I think you could see that in almost any group, and atheists are no exception. They are not Atheists do not have any corner on the market of rationality or skepticism. They don't, you know, so they're people too, just like everybody else. So there you go. Indie Girl. Did you read all of Hubbard's writings or know of anyone who did? I also wonder if any Scientologists ever stop and think, what the heck have I got myself into? Okay, I did not read all of Hubbard's works, and I'll tell you why. I don't think anybody has. Not all of them. I don't think any one person has. And here's why. A lot of people don't necessarily know this, but L. Ron Hubbard was prolific beyond prolific. I mean, the guy wrote thousands and thousands and thousands of pages of material. But he did. But all of that material is not publicly available. In fact, a great number of issues and writings that he put down are never going to be publicly available. He wrote all the policies, or a lot of the policies, for the Church of Scientology to operate. He wrote all of the technology of Scientology, all the books and things you see on the shelves at the Churches of Scientology. If you go in and you look at them, it's an impressive amount of work. It's all bullshit, but it is still an impressive amount of work, okay? It took years and years to write all that stuff down, and he revised this stuff constantly, and you have some of these issues and policies that were revised 4, 5, 6 times over the years. You have all these books, you have all these lectures, thousands of lectures, but in addition to that, at the higher levels of the church, with the C organization, he also wrote policies and guidelines for the C organization. And these were put into issues called flag orders. And there were also central bureau orders and executive directives and other secretarial to the executive directives. I mean, he had all kinds of issues, issue types, okay? And they had different color codings and whatnot. And a lot of those issues are confidential. They're contained in packs that only exist on the Sea Org bases, and or they only exist at upper levels of management or upper levels of Scientology, like at that international base in Hemet, California. He wrote a whole series of issues about cinematography, about they're called Cine executive directives, and they're how to do lighting, how to do filming, how to do color, you know, all this stuff for how to make films, right? Because he considered himself a film expert, and he wrote down all these guidelines and policies on that. I've never read any of those. I just know they exist, right? So, and then there's other advices, they're called, which is when Hubbard was in hiding and couldn't be seen or perceived to be running Scientology, he wrote issues, and they were called advices, because they were only advice, right? Yeah, sure, they were orders, but he called them advices, and a lot of those are confidential, and they're very very specific to specific situations. Like, there's a series of advices that have to do with the Los Angeles organization and how to run that organization, and there's probably other advices about running Int Management and that sort of thing, or running Golden Era Productions, which makes all the films, right? Does all the dissemination of Scientology. All of this stuff received, attention from him, and writing and lectures that he gave on how to run this stuff. So when you ask, have you read all the works of L. Ron Hubbard? You just go, knowing, you know, the extensiveness of it, you know, there's almost no, you know, it'd take you years to get through all this stuff if you had full access to all of it. And at the various levels of Scientology, they don't even know about some of the things I just told you about, right? Like, if you go to one of the city churches, right, one of the orgs, like the one here in Denver or the one in New York or the one in Miami, they're not even going to be familiar with all those issues I just told you about, because they never even heard of them, right? So they don't even know. They just know that Hubbard wrote a lot of stuff to take care of everything, right? So no public Scientologist is ever going to be able to read all this stuff. And I don't know that any Sea Org member who would have full access to everything he ever wrote and said ever had the time to read everything he ever wrote and said. So, no, I don't think anybody has. And as far as the answer, the, you know, what the heck have I got myself into? Yeah, of course. I think a lot of Scientologists ask themselves that at one point or another. And sometimes that question leads to them getting themselves out. And sometimes it leads to, you know, the cognitive dissonance of them going bzzz. And, you know, no, okay, head down, must comply, must obey, must agree. And so they just kind of carry on as Scientologists, duping themselves that they're doing the right thing. Jeff Smith, in a recent Q&A video, you said management was not interested in expanding churches when you found a way to successfully accomplish targets for one org. Why not? If they could expand orgs, wouldn't they make more money and expand the cult? Why wouldn't they want to expand the cult in reality instead of just claiming to? Great video, by the way. Love them. Keep up the good work. What I meant when I said that they weren't interested in expanding Scientology is that the bureaucracy of management is more interested in being a bureaucracy and towing the party line than it is in getting the job done. And that's what I meant by that, okay? It's not that the people in management aren't honestly slaving away trying to do what they think is the right work that needs to be done in order to expand Scientology. They're working their asses off. They're not allowed to do the work that would actually expand Scientology because and it's not because somebody is saying you can't do the work that's going to expand Scientology. It's not that blatant. It's not that open. Instead, they're focused on emergencies that don't matter at all. They're focused on work that needs to be done because David Miscavige says it has to be done, and it's busy work. It doesn't result in anything. And the reason for that is because David Miscavige has got to be one of the worst executives or managers who's ever walked the earth. And I personally believe he's, you know, a little nutty. So he's not interested in expanding Scientology. This I am positive of. He personally doesn't care about expanding Scientology. Now, that might not make a lot of sense, but neither does he. Look at what he does. He beats his juniors. He is way more involved in self-aggrandizement and narcissism than he is in actually trying to run an organization that's going to carry on into the future and accomplish its goals of clearing the planet. And the reason this is so obvious, there are many reasons why this is very obvious. If David Miscavige truly believed in Scientology and truly wanted to expand it and get more members, he wouldn't be doing any of the stuff that he's doing. And he would be doing many other things that actually would expand Scientology, right? I mean, this is not rocket science. Running an organization is not, like there's thousands of people who do this. They have businesses, they expand their businesses, they're successful, right? There's ways to do this. And when you have a service organization that has been built up over decades, as Miscavige did when he got, you know, the reins in the early 1980s, even with that splintering and factioning that happened, even with that level of incompetence and mismanagement that caused that kind of splintering, they still managed to keep the boat, you know, afloat and going, only to have Miscavige then spend the next 25 years from 1990 forward, let's say, just crashing and crashing and crashing this thing against the rocks over and over again. And at this point, it is sinking. It's sinking under the water. It's almost all the way under the water as far as I'm concerned. So they're not bailing water. They're not like doing the things you would do to get that ship going again. They're doing everything it seems possible to sink their own ship. Right? I mean, look at their public relations. Look at their releases. Look at the statements they make, right? None of that is conducive to inviting new members on board. and the way they respond to their critics, it's beyond, it's an atrocity of public relations. So, and beyond any just the public relations aspect of it, the management, okay, of Scientology are kept in this hamster wheel of useless motions, okay? They have programs. Okay, let me give you one example. Okay, you get a program. It's a series of steps that are supposed to get done in order to accomplish a specific purpose. And in this case, let's say you have a program that's supposed to build up the public divisions. It's supposed to get the new public in, okay? But here's what happens. Is the program goes to, let's say, the Denver Church of Scientology, and the public executive secretary who's over the new public coming in gets this program, and he's supposed to do these steps. Well, he gets hounded to do steps that are easy to do, and he does those steps, and then he puts the program in a drawer because he's got to be, because he's also getting pounded at the same time to go sell some books. And he's also getting pounded at the same time to reg people, to sell people books. And he doesn't have any new people to sell them to, so he has to find existing Scientologists to sell them to. And he's also getting pounded to recruit more people, because in order to build up this division, this public division area, he's got to have more people, because it's just arbitrarily ordered that he have 10 new people working in the area. So now he's supposed to go recruit people from a recruit pool or personnel pool that doesn't exist. And this goes round and round and round all day long. Not to mention all the meetings he has to go to, because there are, you know, daily what are called product conferences where he's getting yelled and screamed at because he's not getting enough done. And then he's got to have meetings with his juniors. And then there's the weekly staff meeting. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. And so the actual time this man has to actually do the work that would result in new people coming in is at most an hour a day. That's how it kind of works out, right? When you get down to the brass tacks of the efficiency of Scientology staff. And it's even worse at the level of management in the Sea Organization. These guys, like I used to be, who work at the Continental Liaison Offices, which are the Continental Management Offices. I mean, it's like 4 or 5 meetings a day. It's yelling and screaming. It's sending out orders and telexes, demanding instant compliance to things that nobody can instantly comply to. It's a rat race. And that's what I meant when I said that they're not allowed to do the things. They're not interested in expanding their organizations, because they're not allowed to expand their organizations, because all this rigmarole is given way more weight and importance than just streamlining all that crap out of existence and doing the things that you need to do to expand. So I hope that makes sense. I'm trying to condense years of experience and information into a very short answer here. I could talk about this for a really long time. A lot of this, these procedures and meetings and nonsense and yelling and running around comes from L. Ron Hubbard, and it's exacerbated by David Miscavige, right, through all these policies and things that Hubbard said on how you're supposed to run organizations. Most of these policies just get in your way. They don't actually make the organization expand. They keep it from expanding. So anyway, I hope that gives you some idea of what I meant by that. And it took me years of living in this world of nonsense and then getting out and doing something away from that, just determining I was going to go do something, and I did it, and I pulled something off, and then I went back thinking, okay, we're going to do this. And everybody was like caught up in this rat race of nonsense saying, no, you're not. No, we don't have time for that. We got to do this and this and this instead. And I finally realized, oh, we're not here to get expansion done. We're here to do the rat race. Okay, so there you go. Looks like it's time for Flash Answers. Jen Claire, love the channel. You make things simple enough to understand. Are dictionaries allowed in the church? Yeah, absolutely, of course. I think maybe you might not be familiar with the fact that Scientologists are actually rabid about having lots of dictionaries around to look up words they don't understand. Anyway, it's a whole part of Scientology. So we'll just check out study tech or study technology, and you'll find out what that's all about. Riggs BF. Dear Chris, did you ever go to the Psychiatry and Industry of Death Museum when you were in the Sea Org? Yes, I did. In fact, I not only went there, I actually was involved in making the signage, the great big sign, the CCHR fist, that hangs over that museum. But I also, yeah, I did go over there, and I did see that exhibit, and I also watched all the psychiatry DVDs of all of the, you know, hate speech that Scientology puts out about psychiatry, and I used to believe that stuff. And that was one of the reasons why, after I got out, I had to do a whole re-education on myself on the subject of psychiatry, because it's you know, sometimes it's pretty bad, but it's not anywhere near as bad as Scientology makes it out to be, and it also does a whole lot of good. John Stewart, are any people in touch with you or with other campaigners like Tony Ortega while they are still members? Do you and others get information from disgruntled insiders? Not asking for specific details here, of course. I'm sure OSA is watching. Yeah, of course. I have all kinds of people reach out to me, and some of them are still in the church or on the fence, and they see my videos, or they see Tony Ortega, they reach out to him. He definitely has said on his blog that he has inside sources. So, yeah, the answer is yes. Okay, and so we've reached the end of our episode. Thank you very much for coming around and watching. I hope these answers were helpful and educational to you. And if they were, maybe you'll consider throwing me some love either through my Patreon campaign, which is an ongoing support for me and my channel. It's not just a one-time deal. Or you can just use the donate button on my homepage of my YouTube channel and throw me some love that way. And regardless of any of that, I'm really glad you guys are coming around and watching. Feel free to comment away. I love your feedback. I love what you guys have to say, good and bad. And leave your questions below, and I will see you guys next week.